John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network, and Terry Anderson is here of the Hoover Institution, the editor Terry Anderson, an author. His new edited book is Adapt and Be Adept, Market Responses to Climate Change. Without the market, you have people who live very carefully on the land. Their subsistence, there's an elaborate definition of subsistence, but in any event, what it means is that you deal with your environment effectively. You keep heat and food and your children prosper. There is an Alaska Native village chain throughout Alaska, the United States, called ANV in this book, a very excellent piece by a anthropologist who spent time with the Alaska Native villages. And what I learn is that there are a series of laws that have been passed since 1971 and 1981 in the late 20th century that have not permitted or inadvertently left out participation by the people who live near the wildlife and the sustainability of the Alaska Native villages. And the lesson I take from this, Terry, and I'm submitting it to you, the editor, lesson I take this, unless the consumers or the villagers or the people who live on the land and live inside the adaptation, unless they participate, none of your solutions are going to work. Is that the lesson you wanted me to learn from this chapter?
Very much. They have known how to adapt for eons, and because of all the things you just described, have no ability to really adapt. They can't follow the caribou herds. They can't move along the rivers to different fishing zones. And that inability to adapt is just a major part of what it stands in the way of adaptation to climate change. Let me back even further up to Native Americans in the continental United, or what is now the continental United States. They didn't just survive on the Great Plains. They thrived, and they thrived by adapting. They thrived by following bison herds. As one of my Native American friends in northern Montana said, people think we just stumbled upon berry patches. No, we knew where they were, and we cared for them. They adapted in that way. And I think we've lost sight of the human ingenuity, the hope that we should have as human beings, given our long history of human ingenuity, to adapt to all variety of things, COVID most recently, I suppose. But adaptation to climate change then is a true hope for how we can live with and indeed prosper from climate change.
I begin the conversation about Kenneth Costello's chapter on what are our choices, political choices in climate change and adaptation. As I understand it, Terry, and correct me because I'm making notes very quickly on this complicated story, we have three possible responses. A collective response, that would be that we all live in heaven and we agree with each other. An incentivized response, that would be, say, a climate club or carbon tax, either shame or legislate or force people into certain conduct, and a market's response. So let us speak of the, not collective, we're not in heaven yet. Mark Twain is, but we're not. All right, let us speak of the incentivized choices. Does that describe something utopian called a climate club? Does that describe carbon tax? And why or why not will those work for us?
Yes, it does describe a carbon tax, and the chapter by Ken is a good description of why the blackboard economics, as he points out, which is the derivation of the carbon tax. It's the idea that economists can draw some graphs on the blackboard and show you that if we shift the curves around this way and that way, we can achieve socially optimal results. What blackboard economics forgets is that if you look out the window into Washington, D.C., it is not economists striving to find the optimal carbon tax that will generate this socially bliss point, the social bliss point, but rather it's politics that determines what that tax is. And when the tax, if a carbon tax gets imposed, it will be differential. It will be based entirely on who's at the table, or as I once was in a conference with the Wall Street Journal and in a discussion there, as Jeff Immelt, the former CEO of General Electric, put it, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And if you're at the table when they determine the optimal carbon tax in Washington, you're going to say, don't tax me, tax them. And that taxation will certainly have incentive effects, but it won't be socially optimal.
It will not be socially optimal because there's some arbitrary numbers here that cannot be fixed. The social costs of carbon is one of them. The pollution tax, taxes in general. But what I learned from Ken Costello is that this whole story comes to a halt when there are polarized views. Did I read that correctly? That polarization is what must be avoided.
Yeah, I mean, the polarized views are what arise, again, in the political discussions. Don't tax me, tax you. And that's what creates the polarization in the first place. It's politics that creates the polarization. And the option then is to seek ways that are not polarizing, but rather are harmonizing. And markets do that. And it, really, this book is about how do we as human beings harmonize with one another and with the climate change that we are facing.
All right. So we should avoid rhetorical heat. We should avoid polarization. Boy, does this not sound like Washington, Terry. Okay, fine. But we're going to do all that. And the reason we're going to do all that is because the politicians are not in charge. If I see this, Mr. Costello is making the case that the consumers are in charge. That would be the same as those Alaska Native villages. They're in charge of managing that river, not the bosses in the capitals.
In the market, it's the consumer who ultimately is in charge. Many people may think that we're all governed by these evil corporations, but we as consumers are in charge, and we will adapt if faced with the reality of climate change. And it's happening. I mean, it's happening as farmers begin to move crop production farther north because it doesn't freeze as early and as late as it used to. Here in Montana, wheat crops are beginning to be grown in places they weren't grown before. And that's a response by people who are consuming the environment, if you will, consuming the weather to produce the wheat that we all want in our bread.
I'm glad you mentioned Montana, Terry, because at one point you were entertaining the vineyards of Montana. Now, that seems a bridge too far right now, given the weather of April and September where it snows. But it's not impossible that you could have vineyards there in some of the valleys. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And again, if you actually look at grape production in Europe, the really good grape production in France is slowly migrating to the north and to the east. And it's going to happen in the United States. Look at the Columbia Valley in Washington. It was never known for its grape production 50 years ago. Today, it's a major producer of fine wine.
Let's go to the question of trade and climate policy when we come back. Adapt and be adept. Terry Anderson is the editor. I'm John Batchelor.